News media prods their fears, implying that every teenage male is one frustration away from shooting his classmate, facing sexual assault charges, or online gambling himself into partial brain damage and debt. This noisy message from the outside joins up with a quiet despair hidden in the parents' hearts. They're grieving the loss of the precious little guy who begged a parent to lie down with him until he fell asleep, to read one more story, to listen to the funniest joke ever. That boy is gone, replaced by a guarded and gruff fellow who averts his eyes and stiffens if you lean in for a hug. As he travels the road from boy to composed and generous young man, your son's reticence is to be expected. He's keeping a wider berth, one that can accommodate a posse of favored friends at school, teammates, new inspirational adults, perhaps a girlfriend. If you don't take his brusqueness personally, chats with your teenage son can be funnier and more enlightening than those you'll have with anyone else. But certain rules and conditions apply. When it comes to talking to teenage boys, there are distinct dynamics between a mother or father and a son. Let's look at those first. My nervous, nosy mother. For a teenage boy, self-control is a limited resource, and his cash is used up before dinner. All day long, he deftly follows a series of complex code-switching rules. He addresses teachers with respect, determines the precise blend of boasting, camaraderie, and playfulness that allows him membership in his friend group, and listens with care to the subtle but crucial directives of the orchestra leader, swim coach, or tutor. He arrives home depleted from the mental and physical exertions of his day. But wait, who lurks just outside his bedroom door? The woman formerly known as Mommy, eager to hear everything. So, how did you think you did on the social studies test? Did you decide if you want to try out for the musical? Feeling ready for the meet on Sunday? The boy knows it's wise to avoid this conversation because his honest response is, I don't know, not yet, not really, will both disappoint and arouse suspicion, which Mom will pass along to Dad, which Dad will interpret as a call to arms. So the boy just mumbles or pretends he's sleeping or tries a stall using as few words as possible. Later, Mom. Lots of homework. Adolescent boys back far away from Mom in part because she's female. She has breasts, which he will feel when she hugs him or see when she leans in to look at his homework. Since he can't predict how his body will react, it's best to keep a safe distance. But it's also more complicated than hormones. Mom's default protectiveness, a natural and understandable impulse, will lead her to look for the dangerous potential in what the boy is telling her, rather than to respond with neutral curiosity. Boys know that if they sound excited about an upcoming overnight trip to a nature reserve with their biology class, distracted Dad will probably respond, cool, while Mom will say, cool, and then veer into a litany of questions about the weather, mosquitoes, adequate clothing, food, and the type of vehicle that will be transporting the students. As a mother, you might find it hard not to convey wariness in your tone, even if you manage to monitor your words. You'll need to wean yourself away from those habits if you want to convince your son that it's safe to talk to you. Throughout a teenage boy's development, he longs to be confident of his mother's devotion and affection. This may come easily, or it may require the mother to take an accounting of personal injuries perpetrated by the males in her life, brothers who were permitted to torment her or whose cruelty was ignored. The emotional gap created by the absence of her own father, the lack of strong, kind men overall in her childhood or in her current work environment. This self-inventory allows a mom to protect her son from her own prejudices and projections. It also lessens the chance that she will unintentionally treat him as a scapegoat, an easy target for revenge. When talking to your son, resist beginning every encounter with a flood of queries or words of any kind. Allow for some warm-up time. A relaxed facial expression and friendly gaze send a simple nonverbal message. I'm happy to see you. Proffering food rather than inquiring whether some is desired knocks his defenses right down. For conversation to flow, it's essential to pick up cues, to sleuth out and demonstrate fascination about his current enthusiasms and convictions. Consider this shopping list a 16-year-old handed his mom when she asked what he wanted at the supermarket. Broccoli and cauliflower, organic, locally sourced. Organic almond milk, unsweetened only. Cashew butter, raw, organic. Beef, grass-fed. Telling me about it later, the mom said, "Can you believe this? Since when is he so pure? 2 nights ago, he was wolfing down tacos from a street cart. Beef, grass-fed, cost twice as much as regular beef." Though it might strike the mother as outlandish, this list is the type of item that invites sincere probing, if you can control the urge to roll your eyes. Why grass-fed beef? Is it about sustainability? Taste? The likelihood that grass-fed cattle are treated more humanely than those housed in an agri-corporate feedlot? The boy's replies will tell you about his current sensibility, and your questions will assure him that you value his perspective. Around the house, you can take advantage of 2 avenues into conversation. 1 is accidental. He wanders into the kitchen, you're fixing dinner, and you say, "I need help chopping these vegetables, thanks." If he forgets that you prefer the carrots to be of uniform size and sliced on the diagonal, maybe don't mention it. Or, "We've got 2 rakes and lots of leaves in the yard. Let's give it a go." Or, "These towels need folding. Help me decide which magazines to toss and which to keep." As you're working side by side, he'll start to talk. You'll listen, offering occasional murmurs of interest or asking a question that pertains directly to what he's discussing and does not detour into an area of his life you're worried about. The more intentional version of this is an offshoot of the family citizenship from which no child, no matter how scholarly or talented, should be exempt. Your son needs to be responsible for some household chores, and while he's doing them, you can be there too, working on tasks of your own, not grilling him, but making a general comment about something that does not involve him, like the news or a piece of local gossip. Even if he's wearing headphones, Your presence in the room may disturb the airways enough for him to unplug and add his two cents to your remarks. One thing I caution moms against is demanding too much tech support from their teenage sons. Just as I ask parents of small children, what percentage of your conversations consist of nagging, chastising, and reminding, I ask parents of teen boys, what percentage consists of pleas for help with devices? If it's too often, the boys may feel exploited. For mothers of sons, then, the main tasks are to actively look for ways to engage on topics of the boy's choice and to tamp down a natural tendency to worry and overthink. A reliable antidote to the anxiety: confer with a trusted friend or relative, not your partner, who knows your son well. Seeing him through the eyes of a loving observer will supply a new perspective and possibly allow you to get a good night's sleep. My weird, judgmental dad. Teenage boys withdraw from their fathers because, from their point of view, wow, dad has really changed. At five, boys see dad as heroic, up so high, especially when they're riding on his strong shoulders. It's a privilege just to be near dad. The majesty of playing Monopoly alone with dad, going to the dog park together and stopping on the way home for donuts, of strapping bikes onto the car and driving to the lake for a ride and a swim, all this makes a young boy feel powerful and protected. Then, sometime between 9 and 14, the admiration fades. The natural rhythms of boy and man diverge. Now a father-son fishing trip can seem like an innocent but oppressive abduction, slow-paced, even lonely. Dad's taste in music and movies, his pride in scoring box seats at the playoffs, meh, compared to the son's love of, as psychologist Carl Pickard describes it, the renegade, the urban, the percussive. Now he's enthralled by YouTube DJs, the way his coach curses all the time, and of course, every single thing about his 19-year-old cousin Kai, so cool and perfect and, unlike dad, really fun and understanding. It's not just that father and teenage son may now have fewer interests in common. Spending time with dad means he may be judged in a negative way because of his father's outdated grasp of everything. Yet even though the teenager views his dad in a less exalted way, he still wants his approval and fears his criticism. Fathers do tend to be more critical of their sons as the boys grow older. They mean well. They want to make sure the boys will be able to fend for themselves out in the world. But dads sometimes aren't aware of how much the ground has shifted for young people and will surely keep shifting. If the American way decrees that every generation must surpass the previous one, how are these boys going to surpass their fathers? The dads assume their own road to success is the most reliable path for their sons. But that path may not even exist anymore, at least not in the way the fathers would recognize. Parents don't understand the new economy, and dads don't necessarily understand what makes an appealing college candidate. The sons know this, but at the same time they're comparing themselves to their fathers and thinking, how will I make him proud of me? The whole predicament is overwhelming, and the easiest response for the boys is to withdraw. How can fathers connect with this vulnerable yet prickly creature? By doing what they've always done best, hanging out and having fun together. A great many dads who adored goofing off with their boys when they were little don't realize that shared leisure time with a teenager is vital for maintaining that bond. Start with up-to-date versions of old pastimes. Maybe a fixed-gear bike for his birthday so you can go riding together and he'll look cool while mastering a new skill. If you ski and your son snowboards, go to a mountain that permits both on the same slopes. On the home front, you can binge-watch his favorite show with him and stretch to see the wit, thrill, and emotion in it. Order two pizzas. Calm down. You're not going to do this every day, but the shared experience gives you a new set of references and in-jokes, something to talk about that's actually interesting to your son. All these activities require faith and commitment because they're outside father's accustomed problem-solving mode. Dads who fear they'll never regain their teenage son's respect and admiration can take comfort from Mark Twain's famous observation. When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in 7 years. Conversational Playbook for Teen Boys. To set the stage for conversing with a teenage boy, it helps to recite a brief internal pep talk. I'm going to pretend this young male is a student from a foreign land. He acts confident, but is unsure of the territory. Behold his energy and enthusiasm, but don't confuse his size and IQ with maturity. Effective communication with adolescent boys is brief and direct. They won't tolerate lectures or long-winded explanations. Be brief, but not blunt. You can be direct while also being tactful. Humor eases the way, but not if it's at your son's expense. Even if you both enjoyed joshing around when he was little, and his main mode of communication with friends is throwing shade, at this stage he's too sensitive for emotional roughhousing with parents. Sarcastic comments from mom or dad can cause shame and bitterness. Testosterone is steering your son's moods and desires. The changes in his body unnerve him. Sudden growth spurts and a cracking voice, or months when nothing happens and he doesn't grow an inch. Strong feelings are stirred but must be hidden. Tears suppressed. On the bright side, unlike when he was a little boy and you had to speak to him loudly and face to face, in this new phase of life, he possesses excellent hearing and full command of language. His lack of response to a simple question, damn it, doesn't mean he hasn't heard or understood you. It means he's thinking about it or doesn't want to respond. Therefore, as teenagers themselves so often say, you don't have to yell. Expect to feel envy. You used to be his hero, but now your son is looking elsewhere for inspiration. His ability to attract mentors is a sturdy predictor of his future success in the outside world. So default to encouragement rather than suspicion when he lists the mind-blowing attributes of a favorite teacher, coach, older student, or new girlfriend. Speak openly, but not often, about your own missteps or foibles. Share these anecdotes lightly, with the acceptance that no one ever outgrows doing dumb stuff, making mistakes, or feeling embarrassed. Be on the lookout for free information. If he starts to talk, put down your device or swivel your chair away from the screen. Allow him to continue speaking until he draws the conversation to a close. If he's negative, complaining about the assholes at school, unfair grading policies, or favoritism, consider it a compliment. Letting off steam is welcome here. If his tale is dull, overlong, or lacks a compelling narrative arc, listen, 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 and then ask questions, both to show your enthusiasm and to subtly demonstrate how to summarize the story. Parent, you're saying you want to be a DJ. Son, I have everything I need. Jasper's getting paid to be the DJ at Sophie's birthday, and he only has 5 hours of music. Parent, and you have 4 days. Don't use reason or evidence to disprove his ignorant views, exaggerations, or distorted perception. Don't insert your own agenda or pivot to a related topic. Keep in mind that today's goofy or outrageous talk is a foundation. It will mature into serious sharing of feelings and opinions if you prove yourself a trusted traveler. This will take time and patience. In all conversations with your teenage son, keep in mind the following. Tone and pitch. A soft tone has power to calm, reassure, and convey respect, even if your message carries a needed rebuke. Instead of shouting, try repeating what you said more gently, or evaluate the importance of your question or comment. Consider letting it go. If your son's tone is contemptuous, resist responding in kind. Despite his braggadocio, his pride is exceedingly delicate. A caustic tone feeds the self-mockery he battles as he wakes up to find the worst acne eruption yet. Recognition that he's the second shortest boy in 8th grade. Disappointment that he didn't make the baseball team. A polite tone conveys respect, which feeds his self-respect. If he hasn't followed through on a responsibility or agreement, try not to sound indignant or disgusted. Simply say, "We agreed that I wouldn't get involved in your homework if your grades were solid. They've slipped, so now I'll be monitoring how you spend your time. I'm sorry you're not feeling well, but you need to take out the trash cans." When he talks about his feelings, use an accepting, questioning, almost tentative tone. "Sounds like you're disappointed in Carter." Be aware that your interpretation could be wrong, but if you're right, it could be even more painful for him. If he denies it, acquiesce. "I wasn't there, so I don't know the details. I'm sure you have a better take on this than I do." Tempo. Slow it down, lest your quick-thinking son feels he's in a debate. Insert a pause between his query, attack, or position and your reaction. This gives you time to reflect, even if only for a millisecond. When your impatient son demands, "I've got to know now," remind yourself of your right to ponder. Facial expression. While little boys are often too busy dashing about or hyper-focusing on a game to study a parent's countenance, teenage boys have an uncanny ability to read your nonverbal messages through walls. If your son is near enough to see you wince or smirk, even if it's just a flash in his peripheral vision, he'll register it. Sometimes you'll want to communicate with just a look. At other times, exercise the same mindful discretion with your expressions as you do with your words. Body language. Mothers, a brief affectionate pat on his back, arm, or head, calibrated by how comfortable he seems with the contact, is probably acceptable while you're talking to him. Other than that, maintain a respectful physical distance. Don't crowd him or attempt to snuggle close on the couch. Dads, sometimes you get to hold him tight. Think about the spontaneous body language of football players celebrating a big win. Bear hugs, butt slapping, and yelps so exuberant that these graceful men lose their balance and end up in a pile of joy and fellowship on the ground. If you and your son share in a personal best, "Dad, we actually hiked this sucker in under 3 hours," you can let loose, holler, and hug. If even in jubilation he shies away from unabashed physical intimacy, stick with the hoot and holler and some hearty high fives. Timing. If the conversation is important and could potentially take tricky turns, pick a time when your son is not hungry or fatigued. Most people aren't at their best first thing in the morning, and this is especially true of teenage boys on school mornings. The optimal time for discussions he'll need to remember depends on your son's sleep schedule and internal clock. Pay attention to when he seems to be most calm and alert, and time your chats accordingly. Setting. Most males prefer to talk while you're sitting next to them or doing a physical activity together, rather than engaging in prolonged eye contact. Listen or float ideas while driving, walking, in the bleachers at the stadium, waiting for the movie to begin, cooking together, playing fetch with the dog, or in his bedroom with the lights down low. Dim lights or darkness can provide teenage boys a welcome shield from parents who want to read every nuance of their facial expression. Did I see a tear? A look of contempt? It also offers cover to the boy who is self-conscious about his still uneven proportions, hair, or acne. What not to say to a teenage boy? What are you doing in there for so long, with the door closed? Why didn't you say something? How did Simon and Jack do on the test? What's wrong with you? What were you thinking? So, what's Tyler's mom like? Prodding for intel about their friends or friends' families will arouse suspicion. Why do you need to know? Don't you trust him to choose good affiliations? See what you can do when you apply yourself? You're amazing. You are so gifted. The paradoxical alchemy of boys' motivation is that telling him he's talented is likely to discourage him and, because of his natural self-doubt, invite rebellion. I can't believe you like this band. They have zero talent. Don't denigrate his taste. It's similar to criticizing his friends, which is like criticizing him. But you can say in a good-natured tone, "I must admit, I'm not getting this music yet." This puts the onus on you and makes your son happy because you're acknowledging how unknowable and separate from you he has become. We need to talk. These words will cause your son to shrivel up or quake. When delivering new rules or negative feedback, just come out and say it in the simplest ways possible. What to say to a teenage boy? Be businesslike. A frank professional approach works best when communicating responsibilities, questioning him about his schoolwork, or discussing any of life's chores. Avoid pleading, grilling, or tense reminders of what he promised to do. Detach. Bargain and give him choices when appropriate. Ask, "What's your plan?" in an earnest manner. Be straightforward. When your son's body can't be trusted not to betray him, see acne, erections, cracking voice, it's natural for him to be a bit paranoid. Teenage boys typically expect their parents to have a hidden agenda. By communicating in simple, direct, and honest terms, you're taking into account his islands of thick-headedness and suspicion. Be relaxed and specific with your compliments. To minimize his embarrassment, give positive feedback in an offhand way. "Nice moves on the field today." Express your thanks sincerely and specifically. "You and your friends did a fantastic job cleaning up after the party." Be agreeable. Find opportunities to say, "Sure," "Yep," "Certainly," "You bet," "Name the day," "Thank you, sir," "Good idea, I hadn't thought of that." Help him expand his emotional vocabulary. Just as you did when he was younger, when he talks about feelings, mirror back what you sense he's experiencing beyond the basics of sad, mad, and glad. Sounds like you were relieved, proud, grateful, confused, feeling left out, frustrated. Although teenage boys obviously know the definitions of these words, they still may need some subtle guidance attaching them to specific emotions. Let him know you cherish him and enjoy his tribe. As a counterforce to our male-bashing culture, and because you do, say, "I love you." And also, "I sure lucked out in the sun department. Hungry? What can I fix for you? Your friends are welcome to stay for dinner." Start every day with a welcoming good morning and a smile. Even if he's scowling or glum, give a warm salute. Or pat his shoulder and tousle his hair, if he hasn't already styled it just so. Let him know he's on your mind during the day. Say, "I thought of you today when," followed by something you know he'd appreciate. This is a love letter to children of all genders and ages. Goodwill for teenage boys. The teenage boy's most valued currency is respect for his privacy, agency, opinions, and growing pains. Look for ways to convey your respect and the bank account will steadily accrue. Knock on his door and do not enter until he has given you permission. This is a triple-A bond of goodwill for all teenagers. It also increases the likelihood that he'll respect your closed bedroom door. Trust him. "I ran into Louise and she asked if you could walk and feed her dog while she's away this weekend. She'll pay you. She left directions on her kitchen counter and the key is under the back door mat. Here's her number. Just give her a call and let her know if you're available." Let him speechify without cutting him off. You are not a fact-checking journalist or the PC police. Delete the belittling word mansplain from your vocabulary. Try to discriminate between innocuous fibs and statements intended to cover up serious wrongdoing. Only call him out for the latter. Don't take his public standoffishness personally. Resist feeling rejected if he pretends not to know you when you're walking down the street. He's practicing independence. Extra points if you don't mention it at all, even when you're both back home. Get a dog. Don't ask him to help take care of it. For boys, dogs are the opposite of parents. They don't talk. They're not nosy. You can scratch their belly and it makes them happy. Their ears are velvety. You can touch them as much as you want. You can't touch mom's hair the way you did when you were little. You can tell a dog all your troubles and it'll lick you and not offer advice. You can go on a walk with a dog and not feel self-conscious, like you're going alone and have no friends. You can go to the park and other places where there are humans who will mostly be looking at your dog and not ask what grade you're in or where you're applying to college. Why shouldn't caring for the dog be one of your son's household responsibilities, as it might have been when he was younger? Because for teenagers, dogs and cats can act purely as anti-stress drugs and the cheapest, funniest form of therapy that's available. Nothing else can serve quite the same purpose. Be flexible. A demand for rigid compliance invites rebellion. Accept approximations of politeness and cooperation. Keep in mind that even when he's a head taller than you, he's a beginner at most of the everyday details of adult life. So if he didn't notice the gas tank was empty, let the first oversight be for free. Chapter 8. The Visiting Niece from a Distant State. Teenage Girls. Success is not a straight line, but an unpredictable scribble. Madeline Levine, author of The Price of Privilege. If trying to converse with your teenage son feels like the world's most frustrating game show, at least he doesn't corner you. Most teenage girls produce a tsunami of parent-directed, mostly mother-directed, verbiage. Your daughter may rail against you, insult you, and treat your rules like human rights violations, but at least she talks. This gives you something to work with. Parents suffer feelings of loneliness and grief when their adorable baby girl reaches puberty, just as they do with sons. But with daughters, it's compounded by fear about the potential dangers that await her, especially sexual coercion or assault. Arguments and power struggles often leave parents of teenage girls outraged, hurt, or bewildered. But far-sighted parents can encourage the separation process, making for less friction as the daughter pulls herself free. With practice, you can detach from the drama but be there for her with good sense, good humor, and great but not perfect expectations. My mother, my sister, my frenemy? When a daughter gets home from school, she doesn't necessarily make a beeline for her room. Often she'll stop to download her day to mom. Locked eye to eye across the kitchen table or bent together over a cell phone, mother and daughter get stuck in a feedback loop of concern over the girl's appearance, grades, and popularity. Teenage girls are much more easily rattled than boys. The boys may be painfully self-conscious about their looks or height, but they also figure, I'm a pretty good ball player, or my band is going to be big. I know it. A boy is less likely than his sister to agonize over the difference between a B+ and an A-, or to feel devastated about not getting invited to Ellie's party. And a son isn't about to relinquish any of that info to his parents anyway. A daughter is much more likely to share and share and share and just as she did when her daughter was younger, mom feels and mirrors the girl's emotions. Sunia Luthar, a developmental psychologist and preeminent researcher on adolescent vulnerability and resilience, found that mothers of middle school girls are the least happy of all parents. Mothers are essentially the first responders to children's distress, she writes, and now they must figure out how best to offer comfort and reassurance, as the old ways, hugs, loving words, and bedtime stories, no longer work. Comforting a teenage girl may require a level of sensitivity and patience you've never before had to muster. There's no reliable formula because the girls are so mercurial. You just have to experiment. Contentment comes to those who endure. Luthar promises, our data clearly show that the happiest mothers are those whose children have grown into adulthood. Talk about delayed gratification. Over the years, I've seen a troubling trend. Mothers who have been devoted and insightful parents get unmoored when their daughters enter their teen years. It's commonplace now for a sibling dynamic to creep into the mother-daughter relationship, and the girls are put in the position of being both mom's adversary and her pal. Some mothers angle to be popular with their daughter's friends, hoping to catch some of the sparkle and beauty of youth, to hear the jokes and the gossip. Few daughters welcome this version of mom as big sister. Today's increased academic pressure further complicates the teenage girl's passage into independence. Because girls lack the boy's ability to shut the door and withdraw, the forced collaboration with mom is more troublesome. As mother and daughter toil together like yoked oxen, the daughter's criticism, exasperation, and hostile comments, all natural expressions of her need to separate, may be experienced by the mom as a deep betrayal. Against such a torrid backdrop, the traditional thorny relationship between mother and daughter has become especially volatile. Dads and daughters. The challenge for fathers of teenage girls is twofold. Resist backing away from the daughter once she enters puberty, and find ways to stay connected even though her mother seems so much more plugged into her life. Dads often feel pushed aside by the tight bond between mother and daughter, even if theirs is a love-hate relationship. Mom knows every detail of the girl's academic progress because she visits the school's web portal daily. Dad barely knows it exists. Mom spends hours shopping with the daughter and parsing the details of her social life. Dad loses track of the shifting friend groups. These are generalizations based on thousands of families I've talked with over the years. I'm not referring to gender here, but to domestic and child-rearing roles and responsibilities. Fathers who cede all territory to mom feel the loss deeply. Prior to puberty, his daughter was a little pal, almost like a girl boy, even if she was wearing a tutu and tiara. They could hang out together, go to ball games or ice skating or Home Depot. They could wander the aisles of Costco tasting all the samples. She could sit on his lap, hold his hand, hang over his shoulder to read his magazine. As she looks and sounds more like a woman, adopts a saucy style and speedy, slang-laden patter, or gets a boyfriend, it's easy for dad to feel left out or awkward. But although she may not acknowledge it, a teenage daughter needs her dad. To stay close, choose from a wide-ranging menu of activities especially those that mom doesn't object to but is unwilling to participate in. Horror movies, music festivals, food trucks or ice cream shops, political demonstrations, going to a skate park. You can both take banjo or tennis lessons. Dad's customary role as fun czar doesn't have to come to a halt when his daughter turns 12. He just has to investigate a bit to figure out where her new interests lie. A father's ignorance about the minutiae of his teenage daughter's academic and social life isn't necessarily a handicap. In fact, it's usually a blessing. His presence can be a refuge where the girl feels unwatched and free. Here she learns what it's like to enjoy the company of a man who cherishes and respects her. This is the foundation of any woman's self-esteem. That's why it's vital for single moms to find a trusted man, brother, uncle, granddad, family friend, who can fill this role in the life of a teenage girl. As mothers do with sons, a father should light up when his daughter comes home or climbs into the car after school. Eyes that beam love and approval, a smile and a warm, "Hi, sweetheart," should be the touchstones she can rely on every day. I've found with the families I counsel that fathers sometimes withdraw and stop talking to their daughters because they become afraid of them. Lacking the mother's willingness to plunge into personal topics, "Are you and Connor having sex?" they go silent. Paradoxically, dad's shutting down or being physically or emotionally absent is what leads many young girls into earlier sexual activity, latching on to what I call the teddy bear boyfriend, a warm body to fill the space dad left. Mom's role in the healthy father-daughter relationship is to step back, not micromanage, and not criticize if events, especially meals, don't unfold exactly as they would have on her watch. A perceptive mother will hand over the reins and take advantage of the time off. A big-hearted and confident mom will encourage dad to take the daughter on a college tour and trust his observations when they return. The sticky web of social media. During the teen years, girls are influenced by their phones nearly as much as by their parents. The social dance of their day never ends, measured in likes and followers and numbers. The rational part of a girl's brain knows she should put these digital quantifiers in perspective, but the emotional part takes them literally. Social media creates a trigger of envy and insecurity that perfectly fits the teenage girl's neurological development. On a minute-by-minute basis, she's gauging her worth and predicting her future. All the things mother and daughter fret about together are amplified by her digital footprint. A study by psychiatrist Ramin Mochabai and researchers at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health found that depression among teenagers increased significantly between 2005 and 2014, with a big jump in 2011. Girls were more affected than boys. The factors normally associated with depression, sociodemographics, household dynamics, and substance abuse, did not account for the increase. Worth noting, Snapchat and Instagram both launched in 2011 on the iOS iPhone platform. The study's authors don't remark on that correlation, but citing previous research, they observe adolescent girls may have been exposed to a greater degree to depression risk factors in recent years. Mobile phone use among young people has been linked to depressed mood. Parents' loving attention can counterbalance some of social media's pull. Your example makes the biggest difference, so silence your phone when you're talking in person with teenagers. You don't need to answer every text instantly or consult Google whenever someone forgets a celebrity's name. You grew up having conversations without peering at a phone. Show the kids how it's done. Impress them with your ability to chat, confabulate, and crack jokes using only your mind and memory. Teaching teens about the effect of technology on the brain may help them understand why their mood shifts so dramatically depending on the likes they do or don't receive. There's a growing body of research on this topic, the gist of which is that likes stimulate the same part of the brain as winning money or eating chocolate. No need to lecture them about tech addiction. Just briefly and conversationally mention the research so they have a new context in which to view their own reactions to social media. Conversational playbook for teenage girls. Conversing with teenage girls begins with a quiet moment of talking to yourself. I'm going to pretend this lively young girl is not my daughter, but my niece from a distant state. Behold her passion. See how her friends admire her. Marvel at her style. Note how quickly it changes. Wait at least one day before weighing in on anything she does. Now proceed, keeping in mind the following guidelines. Tone and pitch. Avoid talking in a baby voice or whining, which is irritating to teenage girls. Don't yell, even if she's yelling at you. Aside from that, the usual rules apply with one caveat. You can't win. If your voice is calm and steady, she'll say, "Mom, why are you talking in that fake zombie voice?" She'll pick at the way you phrase things, how you pronounce words, how you ask questions. Refuse to take her bait and keep your tone modulated, but know that you'll be walking on eggshells anyway. Ignore her needling as much as you can, and don't worry. She doesn't talk to her teachers or friends this way, only you. Facial expression. Try to cultivate a pleasantly neutral, resting face, but recognize that it may not matter. Everything that applies to boys in terms of teenagers' hypersensitivity to facial expressions is also true for girls, but girls will challenge you rather than retreat. Why did you get that look on your face, Mom? I can see you. What's wrong? Tempo. Like young girls, teenagers speak very quickly and are passionate advocates for their cause. Consciously remind yourself not to speed up when she does. Speak at your normal rate. You may find it helpful to practice some subtle deep breathing while she's talking as a counterbalance to the tension that's a natural response to listening to another person's anxious monologue. Timing. You don't want to have a significant conversation with her when she's rushing out of the house, preoccupied, fighting with a friend, or has just gotten her heart broken. But when isn't she involved in some urgent matter? There may be no pause in the action, since girls are so often texting or FaceTiming or otherwise communing digitally. Aim for a moment when she's well rested and not running late. Then ask her to silence her phone while you talk. Setting. Keep her company in her room while she's packing for a trip without offering a single suggestion unless she asks your opinion. Watch her apply individual fake lashes or change the laces, why, oh why, on her brand new Doc Martens. Acquire a taste for chopped up micro conversations as you walk one block from store A to store B. She's still got a good memory and can pick up the thread. Recite the mantra, visiting these from a distant state, visiting these from a distant state, and find out why she's a passionate fan of anything. Avoid trigger settings. For example, in her room, if she's casual and you're a naturally neat type, seeing the expensive dry clean only dress she begged for lying on the floor under a muddy boot or two open bags of chips on her night table can set an ugly conversational agenda. Instead, find neutral territory. She's a complex package. Mutually respectful, enlightening, loving conversations with teenage daughters are rare. They absolutely happen, and when they do, you can put them in your affirmation pot. But more often you'll be contending with Lisa Bright and Dark, as a client referred to her daughter. One minute she's furious with you, insulting you, barraging you with a combination of sensible arguments and absurdity. Unfair! Alexander got to stay up past midnight when he was my age. I don't care if he was babysitting. It's time on a clock. You make all these strict, bizarre rules because you have a lot of personal problems. And everyone knows this about you, and they talk about it all the time. You're tired? Why are you so tired? What did you do today? You got to go to work and do interesting things. I was in PE with my sadistic volleyball coach. You think I should buy these boots? Are you insane? Yes, you are. You're an insane person. Do you see how shiny the zipper is? 5 minutes later, she'll want to sit on your lap or brush your hair. She'll ask you how an outfit looks. She'll beg you to make popcorn and watch the new sci-fi series with her. Savor these moments of camaraderie and consider them a preview of the relationship you'll enjoy when she returns home on college vacations, but be prepared for the pendulum to swing at any moment. Teenage girls are agile and inventive litigators. I've heard hundreds of eye-popping stories, but here's a favorite. One morning, a father who lives in Chicago had to go into his 15-year-old daughter's wallet to retrieve a credit card he had loaned her. There he spied a Texas driver's license with his daughter's photo and a stranger's name, age 21. He got his wife, and together they woke the girl, showed her the license, and demanded to know what was going on. Without missing a beat, she said, "Yes, that's a fake ID. I have it so I can go to bars with Haley and Carly and Reed. I never drink. I go to bars because if I didn't, I'd be going to house parties where there's drugs and it's unsupervised. So you should be glad. Bars are supervised. Mom, Dad, I swear I never drink." They gave her back the license. Years later, when the father was telling me this story, he still couldn't believe both he and his wife had fallen for it. "But she was so convincing," he said, and the admiration in his voice was clear. With daughters, it's complicated. Establish rules of civility. She follows me from room to room yelling at me. The vicious things she says about the way I look make me feel like crap. How did I raise such a monster? I feel like her punching bag, and I feel like punching her. Teenage girls are mean to their mothers because they're under so much social and academic pressure, and mom is safe. It's no different from the dynamic that was going on when the children were small, but it's more painful. Lisa Damour, the author of Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood, offers an excellent approach to this problem. She makes a distinction between respect and politeness. Daughters don't need to respect their mothers, she says, and mothers don't need to demand that feeling from their daughters. The daughter can feel any way she likes, but in order to have the privilege of your attention, she is required to speak